Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello football friends, it's the return of the Game Day Premier League preview podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, Alex Crook and the assistant editor of the Daily Mirror, Darren Lewis. Game Day brings you three big games on Saturday, including Manchester United versus Chelsea. Check this out, the Blues bring in Big Pete to cover for Kepa as Ollie steadies United's wheel after readjusting their axle. Will there be a hammering at the London Stadium as Manchester City return to their favourite place to visit? Liverpool start life without Superman, and after a week where everyone has been talking about their sins in the Merseyside derby, Everton head to Saints. Plus, the Roy Hodgson derby and the rest of the previews, with all the messing around without actually really having an impact of PSG's number 10, the Game Day preview podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Well, a good week in the Champions League, and with me to look ahead to the return of the Premier League are Darren Lewis from The Mirror, who promised to come armed with the correct pronunciation for West Ham's big bad Vlad. Have you got it for me?
Yes, I have. Oh. It's Kufal.
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 Sensational. Did you actually ask him?
Yeah, that might be an idea, actually. Although what he might do is give you the FIFA pronunciation, which I know it's the correct pronunciation, but I just can't bring myself, because there are a couple of very, very good commentators on FIFA who give you the correct pronunciation for players like
Bruno Fernandes. Sorry. Is your research for finding this out for me going on FIFA?
No. I'm saying that he may give you the really correct pronunciation.
Okay, which is?
You would then have to use all through the season.
Kufal. All right, fine. Just as long as we know, that's great. Okay, and the man who said that he thought the Merseyside derby would be 0-0, it's TalkSport transfer guru Alex Crook, you right?
I said there was a chance, not one of my best predictions of the season.
What do you think of Champions League? I mean, I thought Manchester United played very well in Paris. Liverpool were a little bit lucky. Pep once again conceding before eventually turning on the star going forward, but they're missing Fernandinho. That's going to be a big miss, Darren, isn't it?
Yeah, they are, because he's so versatile, he's so disciplined. He is a player, even though he's getting on in years, we all know that Guardiola thinks a hell of a lot of him because of what he can do in his team. So they're going to have to find a way to cope without him against a West Ham side that have really defied all the odds. Because when people looked, and I remember doing this show ahead of this run of fixtures, and everyone thought that they'd get ripped apart. And I think there is nobody listening to this right now who would disagree with that. Everybody looked at that run of fixtures on paper and thought that they would end up in the they would be in the bottom three by the end of it.
To be fair, they look like a team that would be in the bottom three up until 81 minutes of that game against Tottenham Hotspur. But we'll get to West Ham in just a second, because they form part of a big Game Day weekend with three massive games, including the Red Devils looking for a repeat of their blue murder.
Rashford shoots towards the far corner and in. Oh, it's a brilliant finish from Marcus Rashford. Absolutely brilliant.
We have had a couple of bad games so far in the league, but we're getting better and better.
And it's fired low through the crowd, and Tammy Abraham will turn in the equaliser.
Of course, we want to concede less. It'll always be something we work on as much as we do our attacking play.
No one does football like we do football.
Ooh, Manchester United versus Chelsea, a European Cup final from 2008 rerun, tight and tactical. Or a one-sided affair like the game between these two on the opening day of last season, where it wasn't actually one-sided. But anyway, three goals or more
in each of the last three meetings between the two. I've got a feeling this might go the other way. Low scoring. What do we reckon, Crook?
Ah, the matter-faced Crook derby. I've given up trying to predict Manchester United, to be honest. I didn't fancy them against Newcastle. I actually did, in a strange sort of way, against Paris Saint-Germain, even when I saw the team. And we had a message in our private WhatsApp group with a United pal of ours saying, look at that defence. And I did say I'm going to keep my own counsel because I just had a nagging suspicion that maybe PSG aren't perhaps the force that their front line suggests. And it was a tactical masterclass from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. You have to give credit where it's due. What does he do this weekend? I mean, how do you leave out Axel Tuanzebe after that performance in the French capital for a start? Low scoring? Not with those two defences, surely.
I thought Manchester United were absolutely superb in Paris. I did that game for TalkSport with Andy Townsend. And from Manchester United's perspective, we do talk about so much about the need for a centre-half, and the solution to all our problems is always, let's go and buy someone who's really expensive and put him into the team. But ultimately, this is a kid who hasn't played for 10 months. He was well thought of under Jose Mourinho. He's hardly had any football. He came into the team and he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. His positioning was excellent. His reading of the game was good. He's athletic. He can get back. This is a team with Neymar and Mbappe in it, and they restricted them to one goal. It's got to be pretty impressive. And by the way, that goal came from Anthony Martial. So, I mean, is there any chance, Darren, that he could establish himself as possibly a partner for Lindelof or Maguire?
It's interesting, isn't it? Manchester United have form for finding players in adversity. I remember Marcus Rashford against Midtjylland when they had loads of injuries and somebody needed to step up, and he did, and he's never looked back since then. And I think Tuanzebe could well be a player. Listen, we did know about him beforehand, but he hadn't matured in quite the same way that he has now. And that performance was one that suggested to me that, yes, he could well be one that stays in the side because of his mobility, his awareness, his speed of thought as much as anything else, and his pace. And I think as far as United are concerned, what they need, you made the point about the performance against PSG, and both of you, you know, well done and everything, but that's gone. And the problem with Manchester United is they are a team you simply cannot trust. Mm-hmm. So they can pull off a fantastic result like that one in Paris, and then they could go and lose at the weekend and stink the place out. What they need to do, what Ole needs to do, is put together a run of 5 to 10 games. I'm not going to suddenly go completely the other way like I've seen on social media. Mm. All those one in the eye for all those people who said Solskjaer can't coach. It was brilliant in Paris last time, and then they fell away. What he needs to do is put together a run.
This is the type of fixture that suits Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, isn't it? Because United tend to play better and get better results against the better teams. I also think it's a bit of a test of how far Frank Lampard has come since the start of last season, because United and Solskjaer did seem to have the sign over his Chelsea last year. I know in the FA Cup semi-final it was different, but Solskjaer overthought his tactics there, didn't pick the right team, didn't pick the right system. But
well, in the two Premier League games, well, didn't he, really?
Yeah, and in the League Cup game, certainly United had the edge. So I wonder, will that be in Frank Lampard's thinking? Will this be a game where he knows that in some ways he's seeking redemption for what happened on the opening day last season?
I think if you take out Silva and you take out Mendy, as was the case against Southampton where they were awful, then they've got no chance. If you put those two players in, they are secure, they're disciplined, and they are a side I think that can take on and beat any side in the Premier League. I've got no compunction about going for Chelsea for this one.
Well, Chelsea are a work in progress. I noticed that they're so desperate to never have to use Kepa again that they registered a bloke who's been retired for 18 months in their Premier League squad just in case. But it's more than that. It's the tactical framework, isn't it, with Chelsea? It's the protection that's given from the midfield. It's the discipline by the forwards not to give sloppy balls away when you're high up the pitch and therefore exposing what is already a fragile defence. There was a couple of chances that Sevilla had during that game on Tuesday night, which on any other given day probably would have gone in. Mendy made an absolutely fantastic save, which I think has gone under the radar because he's going one way, his body's moving to the right, but the ball takes a deflection and goes to his left, and he's got a huge palm on the ball, and he's managed to swat the ball high into the air and get it away, which is important. But he's been a bit lucky too. He's come for things and moved in certain areas where, you know, if it was Kepa in there, it would have flown in the net because that's just the guy's luck. But look, they've got to go out and they've got to start winning games, because they've spent so much money on their attacking talent that they've got to start justifying that. They can't keep just sort of, you know, having one good day, one bad day, and then scoring three goals and letting three in at the other end.
But Sam, they've been incredibly unlucky with injuries, because I think if Mendy was fit, they'd have won that game last Saturday 5 or 6 nil. I was at Palace last year where Chelsea went 2 up, Kepa lets one in, and then suddenly that uncertainty transmits itself to the rest of the side. And I think that's what Kepa does when he plays. I think that's what Christensen does when he plays too. And I think when I thought, and I'm probably in a minority of one, but at the result against Sevilla, I thought was a very, very significant result, because I think that's put calm back into the camp. I think that there is no longer that uncertainty. We've got a hell of a long way to go, and people are saying that whether they will or won't win the Champions League.
It's far too early.
Lunacy.
Far too early.
Bottom line is they needed to calm things down, and those guys provide that security. Kepa concedes that goal you're talking about.
All day long. Well, it was a shot on target. Of course he would have done.
And then there are shambles. But those sloppy errors in midfield and in other areas of the pitch come about because the protection isn't there at the back. The security isn't there.
Yeah.
If Mendy plays, they'll be fine.
I think Conte needs to play as a holding midfield player and give the man the job who statistically makes the tackles that that other players don't. Play Pulisic on the left-hand side. He's not a right-sided player. Keep it simple. And if that upsets one or two, I'm sorry. That's just management. That's the way it is. By the way, has anyone heard from Mason Greenwood? I mean, he's got timekeeping skills of Darren Lewis, apparently.
I think this needs to be a watershed moment, doesn't it, for Mason Greenwood, if it is true that the reason that he has not been in the team of late is because of bad timekeeping. That's unforgivable, really. You know, this is a kid who's been given a massive opportunity at one of the biggest football clubs in Europe. He's obviously made the high-profile mistake when he was at England. You would think he would be desperate to redeem himself, keep his nose clean and get back in his manager's good books, not just at club level, but in the eyes of Gareth Southgate as well. I mean, you have to wonder, if he's picking up the papers this morning, what will he be thinking when it comes to picking a squad for the next round of internationals? So somebody there, and this is where it comes down to leadership and character in the dressing room, someone needs to get hold of Mason Greenwood, give him a shake and say, come on, lad, you know, you are messing about with your career here. I mean, can you imagine if Roy Keane was still in that dressing room, how he would react to a situation like this?
Yeah, I almost wonder if we have to be careful not to be old men about this, you know, because and I only say that, listen, I was laughing before, but it clearly is no laughing matter. And you make important points there, to be fair. But I just think that I see lots of examples of players who early in their careers don't quite get it. You know, we rave about Frank Lampard and what a consummate professional he is. I remember Frank Lampard on his summer holidays with Rio Ferdinand and a couple of the boys doing a few bits and pieces, and his dad famously joking about wanting to see his holiday snaps in a press conference afterwards. You know, I remember some things that went on in the early days involving some celebrated players in our industry. So, and they managed to put it behind them and move on.
Well, that's the key, isn't it? And that's what I think what Crook is saying. It's got to be a watershed moment now. That's it now. You've had a couple of free hits. Now it's time to crack on and concentrate on your career, because you can go one of two ways here, can't you? You can either go on and be Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard, Rio Ferdinand, or you can become Ravel Morrison.
Yeah, but you won't become Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard or Rio Ferdinand if you are crushed by the unforgiving weight of social media, podcasts, press. You know, we all go as though we are detached, but we have a part to play in the development of these players, because we need to understand that people make mistakes. And I think, just as last week I was saying, you know, Maguire needs understanding rather than being mullered. I think this is a young boy who clearly is, Crook's absolutely right, he's making mistakes. I agree even with you, Sam, he is making mistakes. But what we probably need is to give him understanding rather than to kill him and then make things even more difficult for him.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Comes out to Lanzini. Oh, he's done it. It's an equaliser. It's stoppage time for West Ham United.
We don't need any recognition because we've got a big job to do. We know that. But I think we're improving and I think we're getting better.
The chance for Sterling at Manchester City have taken the lead.
If they want to be in for a chance of winning the Premier League this year, I feel Manchester City need to win this game.
We are still away from, a little bit away from what we have to do.
Let's turn our attention to West Ham versus Manchester City at 12:30 live on TalkSport on Saturday. And the Hammers became history makers on Sunday when they sent Mourinho into meltdown. Now they have to raise themselves again. But Darren, they're getting used to that, aren't they? Because this is a team that did the double over Chelsea last year, 4 points from Manchester United last year. They've already beaten Leicester this season. But City should be way too strong, shouldn't they?
They should be. They've got the quality. I look at West Ham and I see a belief in West Ham that people didn't think they had. And they've got a defensive strength about them. And even when that defence does have an off day, as they did against Spurs, they find a way to come back. And I think this could be a special season for West Ham.
Vlad Kovac, he gives that grit, that determination, that still, that thrust. They're showing personality as well, aren't they? But this is over and above a normal opponent. Manchester City have won every trip to the London Stadium Crook, scoring 22 goals in the process. Are we about to see the goals flow again?
You say it's not an ordinary opponent. And obviously they do have sprinklings of stardust in De Bruyne and Sterling and Aguero. But are we judging Manchester City on their previous high standards or on the Manchester City that we've seen this season? Because I watched a lot of that game against Porto in midweek, albeit I had the Bournemouth-Cardiff game on the main screen. I knew my priorities. But it looked like a scratchy performance again from Pep Guardiola's side against a far from vintage Porto team. I feel like he's still, with the new signings, trying to work out exactly what his best team is this season. I don't think they're necessarily creating the plethora of attacking chances that they have under their old guys. So I don't know if this is as intimidating a prospect as it would have been in previous years.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think, given the results that they've had against Spurs, they've had against Leicester, they've had against Wolves as well, I think West Ham now look at this and think, what have we got to be afraid of? There is nothing to be afraid of here. They're coming to our place. In fact, around about this time last year, I watched as West Ham beat Manchester United when a lot of people expected United to win. They've got a confidence about them now and a work ethic. And it was interesting. Did you see Jose Mourinho said that in Suchek in midfield, Moyes has found his new Fellaini. And he's right. He's good in the air, defensively strong, gives that protection for the back four, but can get forward as well. I like him as a player. I think West Ham are going to do well.
He's a great player. I tell you what, though, they should be frightened of Raheem Sterling playing well. He's been involved in each of City's last 5 goals. And with injuries and troubles elsewhere, he really is a fantastic asset. He's very rarely injured. He plays in most games. England certainly missed him during the international break just gone. And he got a hat-trick at the London Stadium last season. I was there on the opening day of the campaign, and he was magnificent in that match. Right, will we get our first look at Saeed Benrahma?
I think he'll be in the squad. I would be surprised if he was in the starting lineup. I think, you know, certainly going forward, it will be difficult for David Moyes to take anybody out of that West Ham team at the moment. I'm keen to go back to Darren's point, actually, about it being a special season for West Ham. What would constitute a special season as far as West Ham are concerned? Is it getting the odd result against one of the big boys, or do you think that they could genuinely mount a European challenge, which a couple of weeks ago would have seemed highly unlikely?
I think they could push into the top six. I think maybe top eight at the very least. In Antonio, they've got a guy who can hold the ball up superbly, bring other people into the plays, very intelligent with the way that he leads the line. And he sets a standard too for Sebastian Haller, who has been doing well in the cup competitions, even though he's had limited minutes. I think that the first 11 have set a standard to the other players around them. And so, yeah, I think that outside of this run of fixtures, which are very difficult, the real test it will be when they come up against sides of similar ability, if you like. And if they can do well in those games, then yeah, I think. And remember, they did it. Remember when Payet was there? And Payet, they were nudging the Champions League places, for goodness sake. And they had some really bad decisions in that season that went against them. And they ended up finishing out of those places. But there's no reason why they couldn't finish in the top six, seven this season.
We get so excited about teams finishing in the top six and blah, 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 blah. But if you go back through the history of the Premier League, and I did it yesterday. This is how sad I am. I wrote down the top from the last 10 seasons. And there's seven teams that have managed to get into that. And six of them have done it consistently, and one team had to win the league to break into it. So the top six always make up the top four, and it's very rare that anybody else creeps into that zone. You get the odd one here and there, but it really is, especially the top four, the preserve of those top six. Right, let's move on.
When did it last happen? I was saying about West Ham. Last happened in 2015. So by that law of averages, I mean, I agree.
Getting into the top six.
They were flirting with the top four in 2015. That's what I'm saying.
But they didn't make it, did they?
They didn't make it, but I'm saying they'll be thereabouts. I'm not saying they're going to make the top four.
They're not going to get in the top four. Come on, Darren.
Not the top four. I'm not saying they're going to get in the top four, but I'm saying a special season for West Ham is certainly one where they're looking around about a top six, seven.
All right. Okay. Well, let's see. Let's move behind the paywall. The next section will cost you 500 bitcoins, but the production will be basic. Please pay.
Low cross into the centre. Sadio Mane is there, 6 yards out to slam Liverpool in front.
I think there was a collision between Jordan Pickford and Virgil van Dijk.
Why should I think that the boys cannot deal with a bitter situation?
Billy Shaw, right footed, smashes it into the net. And Sheffield United are back on level terms at Bramall Lane.
I understand the quality of the opposition and the ruthlessness of the Premier League, but it's not been a good start by us.
Luckily, Liverpool versus Sheffield United, 8 p.m. on Saturday, is live and free on TalkSport. And life without Virgil van Dijk started in midweek in Amsterdam. And as we thought would happen, Jurgen Klopp very quickly redeployed Fabinho into the back four.
Yeah, apparently he's challenged him to be more like Virgil van Dijk, which is a massive ask, isn't it? For someone who spent the bulk of his career playing defensive midfield. But it was the obvious change to make, I think. They still gave away chances against another talented young Ajax side. I think that would be a bit of a concern if they were playing anybody other than Sheffield United, because I did their game against Fulham last weekend for TalkSport International. They were very powder puff in that game. Ollie McBurney just doesn't look like he's going to score goals in the Premier League, nor is McGoldrick. I guess the question there is, can Rian Brewster make an impact against his former club? That's an interesting narrative. But even without Virgil van Dijk, I think Liverpool will have enough to swat Sheffield United aside at the start of what I think is going to be a very difficult season for Chris Wilder's men.
I think that Liverpool may well have to start doing what maybe they did in the first few years of the Klopp era and outscoring teams because they can't keep clean sheets, Darren. But he said in an interview going into these Champions League games that, I mean, it was quite spiky actually in the press conference, wasn't he? Blaming the media for having a... I'm not sure what he was blaming the media for. I think he was blaming the media for writing off their title chances just because they'd lost Virgil van Dijk. But ultimately, without Virgil van Dijk, it is going to be incredibly difficult because even with him, they were conceding goals, right?
Yeah, I think they'd conceded quite a high number even before he had disappeared. So
27 in, I think, 14 games, 15 games, something like that.
Oh, well, 15 minutes. Yeah, but I mean, it was a very high number, and I think, relatively speaking, for
Liverpool.
The press conference, first of all, he was asked, listen, we're all journalists and we all go into press conferences and ask questions that afterwards we might think to ourselves, we could have worded that better. So I'd never be one to criticise anybody else's question. He had taken umbrage at the idea, like you say, that they were finished. They're far from finished because they've got a fantastic forward line. What I think he might do against the better sides is set up in a way that provides protection for that defence. Because although Fabinho can do a capable job, as you say, they gave a very limited Ajax side some chances, and against some of the better sides in the Premier League, they'll get punished. So I think they'll try to protect as much as they can that back four. With the players they have in the middle, they have to put in a real shift. But I still think Liverpool are in with a shout. I just think that it is still wide open and they now have as good a chance as anybody else. Whereas before, for the reasons we all know, we all know what the numbers say. Van Dijk was brilliant in the last, what, three seasons, two seasons, whatever it is, since he arrived. Yeah, I think that they're still in it, but they've now just got as good a chance as anybody else.
Obviously, things go against you as football managers and football clubs, and it's never plain sailing. And ultimately, even if you are the best team in the country, which Liverpool have certainly been for a little while now, someone's going to come along and do a Jordan pitchfork and take one of your best players out. But the way you deal with it is really important. And it's the first time, really, I've seen Klopp go a little bit spiky because things haven't gone his way. Sometimes he can react to a question or whatever, especially if Crook's asking it. But he's usually quite sort of a happy-go-lucky, effervescent character. That certainly wasn't the case, not only in the straight aftermath of Saturday's game, but it continued for a few days. And in the end, I thought, okay, this is going a little bit too much now. You need to sort of move on and crack on. Otherwise, it's you know what players are like. They'll use it as an excuse.
Yeah, I agree. If I was a Liverpool fan, I'd be slightly worried by not just the manager's reaction, but the fact that Gigi Wijnaldum, in the build-up to a big Champions League game, in his pre-match press conference, was still harping back to the incident involving Pickford and Van Dijk. It's done now. It's happened. All teams suffer injuries. Okay, it wasn't a great challenge from Jordan Pickford. I'm not sure he necessarily deserves the vilification that has come his way from certain sections of the Liverpool fan base since that, but
probably
for another podcast.
Clearly not.
But they need to move on. They need to draw a line under it. They are the defending champions. They have a squad that would be the envy of most of the Premier League. So they need to find a way now to succeed in adversity.
I've got to just say, I had a huge row with somebody in my WhatsApp group about this as well. I just can't buy that. He's not just another player. He's one of the greatest players we've had. Probably, I would argue, greatest defenders in Premier League history. Not the great. We have had some great defenders, as we all know, but he's one of the greatest defenders that we've ever had and one of the best players in the world. You can't just move on when you lose.
What'd you do, Mope?
Well, listen, everything has a grieving process, don't you? You're upset. I'd be upset. You know, if we were without any one of you for this and for reasons that were avoidable, you know, it's probably not a great analogy, but you know the point I'm trying to make. You know, you work with someone every day, you recognise their quality, you see their contribution to the team, and then you see that they are you're without them because of something that's utterly avoidable, and the person involved, the person who caused that, doesn't receive any sanction by the people who run the game. Of course you'll be upset about that. And I think they should be allowed to be upset about that. I do not buy into this idea one iota that they should just forget about it and move on. It doesn't work that way.
I think it's probably the case at Chelsea that they've been grieving for the last 12 months because Kepa has been on the team sheet. Sander Berge is slowly showing signs of why the Blades bought him in January. He started to get to grips physically with the game after struggling to do that. And actually, speaking to Kai Havertz, he told me recently that, you know, we underestimate the transition from a European league or even the Bundesliga. He was talking about the Bundesliga, but the transition from a European league to the Premier League is difficult because it is so much more physical and intense in this country. And I think Sander Berge actually will start to have an impact now. He comes from very good stock in that he comes through that Genk Academy, which has produced such a plethora of great talents over the last few years. And, you know, I think it'll be a. I think eventually he'll find his feet. I mean, the quote from him yesterday was brilliant. He said, "In a game in Belgium, there are times when you can actually take a rest. Well, in this country, you certainly can't do that." And I suppose none more than against Liverpool at the weekend. It's a big game for Chris Wilder. After finally putting a point on the board, they take on Liverpool on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Friday night behind the paywall is Aston Villa against Leeds United. And three clean sheets in four for Villa. And they are built on a defensive bedrock, aren't they? But that will be put to the test by Leeds, who don't give you a moment's peace. They didn't score on Monday night against Wolverhampton Wanderers, but they had more than a few chances, Crook.
Yeah, they played well for the first half. Didn't manage to match the intensity in the second half, which would probably be a cause for concern for Bielsa. But Aston Villa keep going from strength to strength, don't they? And I don't think anybody was surprised by the fact they managed to go to Leicester and come away with that late last-gasp victory. And that probably is a mark of the progress they've made under Dean Smith. I have to say, I'm really enjoying watching Ross Barkley at the moment. He seems to be flourishing in that Aston Villa team. We had a bizarre rant, even by his standards, from Adrian Durham saying that Jack Grealish is a problem for Aston Villa and stops them playing. I'm not too sure where he was coming from there, because those two, for me, seem to have already formed a pretty telepathic understanding. Ollie Watkins is a good foil up front. Martinez, the goalkeeper, almost gone unnoticed. Three clean sheets in four games. So big saves in those four matches as well. I was with a former Arsenal player who knows a fair bit about goalkeeping a few days ago, and he said to me that he'd actually told Arsenal, if you sell Martinez, you're selling the wrong goalkeeper. He was convinced that.
Which
he
one was that, David Seaman or Bob Wilson? Because we know you've been hobnobbing with all of these ex-Arsenal legends. Which one was it?
Let's just say it was one of the two.
Why don't you just tell us? Why can't you tell us?
Alex, I always protect my sources, Crook.
you can't say that, and then but put pictures of them on social media.
It was Bob Wilson, who is a big fan of Martinez, not just for the saves that he makes. He actually said that, you know, when it comes to shot stopping, Leno is probably on par. Yeah. It's more the way that Martinez commands the penalty area and is a bit of a throwback goalkeeper, and that he isn't afraid to put his body on the line and punch anything that comes his way.
I'm reading a book at the moment about a journalist who goes to jail for protecting his sources. That certainly wouldn't be Crook, would it, Darren? It'd be straight out there. Judge.
Alex,
Judge,
you may fold under questioning.
This is his name. Yeah, go and get him. Yeah, no, it's no problem. Oh, dear. He wouldn't even protect his ketchup, let alone any other sauce. There are still more away wins than home wins in this league so far this season. Could Leeds be the first to dent Aston Villa's 100% record, Darren?
No, not. I think Villa, again, they're another side where the clean sheets for me are probably as vital as the win, because last season they couldn't defend at all. And this season, there's a lot more discipline about them. There's a lot more quality in the side in front of the defenders, but also in that defence and in goal. It's so, we underestimate the value of a goalkeeper who knows what he's doing.
Some people don't.
Because, well, no, indeed, not you Chelsea fans. But, you know, you look at Emi Martinez. Listen, Reina wasn't that bad, but clearly he's getting on in years. Martinez did the authority, the command he has, the alertness, the focus, and he just transmits itself to that back four. He organises them so well. And I think for Villa, the clean sheets, as I say, are an indication of the direction that they're going in. I don't think Leeds are going to go there and win. I saw them lose to Aston Villa the other day. I think that on occasion, Leeds can be too enterprising. They entertain, absolutely, but sometimes you've got to keep it a little bit tighter than they did against Wolves. And I think that the way that Aston Villa play, I think they'll find some chinks in that defensive armour.
And it's all to do with Lazio. It's all to do with Lazio. During lockdown period, they realised that they were defending poorly. So they watched videos of Lazio and how they defend, and then choreographed their defensive movements and pattern of play by copying what that defence did. And they've come out and they've done a fantastic job. And this is not a record, actually, that started this season. This is a record that goes back into the end of last season. If you go back in their last eight games, they've only conceded in three of them. Fantastic. And two of the goals that they've conceded out of the four that they've conceded in that period came against Liverpool in that 7-2. So it's obviously part of their culture now. So well done to Dean Smith and to John Terry for putting that right. OK. It's time for the roulette rivalry.
What a massive day it is as far as football is concerned. Blockbuster Saturday on TalkSport.
And West Ham lead with their first serious attack. And it's Mikel Antonio.
The chance for Sterling and Manchester City have taken the lead. Raheem Sterling midway through the first half.
Oh, outstanding finish from Marcus Rashford. And Manchester United cutting loose here.
Werner comes forward and Havertz with a tap in. And Chelsea lead again.
Comes back to Salah, who shoots on the volley after a poor clearance from Mina. And he scores his 100th Liverpool goal. McGoldrick reacts and smashes the ball home. And all 3 points are going to Sheffield United.
Now, Lucy, our esteemed producer, is here to navigate our way through three fixtures we haven't touched on yet in Roulette Rivalry. Yes. Lucy, how are you? Okay?
Yeah, I'm good, sir.
Lucy, I'm pleased that you could make it because I understand that from now on you're going to have more commitments, aren't you? Haven't you got a new puppy or you're getting a new puppy?
Yeah, I'm picking up a new puppy in 5 weeks.
Oh, right. Okay.
Already decided on a name as well.
Well, that was quick. Haven't got it. But what if you look at it and it doesn't look like the name that you've chosen?
Well, I've already looked at it. I've already held it.
Have you?
When I selected it. Yeah.
All right.
She sent us a video of her.
I sent you a video, yeah. Shows how much you care, Sam.
You sent us a video? Yeah. Did you really?
Yeah.
It's not much bigger than you, Sam.
What, the puppy?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, I can hold it in my hands, so it's about similar.
Similar size, yeah.
But I've decided on the name.
Oh, go on,
Teddy.
So. Teddy?
Oh, after Teddy, the
great,
Teddy.
After the great Teddy Sheringham, because we're
went
a family
to
of Spurs
United
fans.
Anyone,
so are you serious? You've named it after Teddy Sheringham?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, basically what it was is me and my mum wanted to call it Teddy, and then my dad wasn't very convinced. And then when we said, well, you know, do you think of Teddy Sheringham, he came around to the idea, so it was all confirmed now.
Is that slightly appropriate, seeing as Teddy in his day was a bit of a dog?
I'm not going to comment on that.
Unbelievable.
They called it puppy love. Oh, I guess they'll never know.
Anyway, as much as I've enjoyed the canine chat, let's pick out three games of top pedigree.
Right, let's start with you, Darren.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
And
doesn't usually go first, does he?
Well, you've got to mix it up sometimes, haven't you?
Yeah.
He's never here first, is he?
Oh.
Oh, I was here before you 2 weeks ago.
I was here before you 2 weeks ago. Well done. This is episode 27.
Darren Mason Greenwood Lewis.
Wait, hang on. This is episode 27.
Yeah, since you joined us.
Okay, I'm just saying that 2 weeks ago I was here before you.
Crack on.
Right, I'm going to give you Southampton v Everton. And your time starts... now.
I can't see anything other than an Everton win in this game. The team are playing well. The strikers are playing well. Okay, no Richarlison, bad boy last weekend with that tackle against Thiago. But I think as far as Everton are concerned, Dominic Calvert-Lewin just cannot stop scoring. And I can't see a very static Southampton side. I watched them last week play against Chelsea. Timo Werner ripped them to shreds. I can see Dominic Calvert-Lewin doing the same thing. Aerially, they'll be okay, but on the deck, I think he'll have too many guns for them, and I think James Rodriguez will play his way through them. Everton all day long for me to get the 3 points and to stay at the top of the Premier League and to continue what has been an outstanding start to the season.
Well done.
A little bit disrespectful to King Ralph, I thought.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know. The Yannick Vestergaard looked like a piece of meat with eyes last weekend when Timo Werner went past him. It was just embarrassing. Rolled him, went away from him, slotted the ball in, and Vestergaard was still wondering which way he'd gone.
A very big slab of meat. I mean, he's nearly 2 metres tall. What's next?
Right, let's go with you, Sam.
Okay.
I'm going to give you Wolves v Newcastle. Any time starts now.
Okay, I don't understand, first of all, how this is the live Sunday offering, right? How is this on at 4:30 on a Sunday? Well, actually, maybe I do, because what they want you to do is pay for Arsenal Leicester at 7:15. And That in any other normal circumstances, that game would be the game that was on at 4 o'clock. For some reason, Wolves against Newcastle is on. Newcastle aren't a great team, but they aren't as bad as the anti-Steve Bruce brigade say, but they're not as good as the people that say that Steve Bruce is a genius. They don't create that many chances. They were well beaten last week by Manchester United, and Wolves, who won't go at them like Manchester United did, will certainly create chances. Wolves himself...
You did really well there at talking for 40 seconds about a game other than the match that she gave you.
I thought so too. It confused me a bit there. Is there a Stuart's inquiry on that one?
I was asked to talk about Wolves Newcastle, and that's the story for me.
Why are you talking about Arsenal or Leicester?
Because that's the story. You know, why is that game not on Sunday afternoon when Wolves Newcastle is?
I think the Stuart's might need to take a look at that one.
It's just like Crook when he doesn't know what to say and he goes, really looking forward to this one.
Oh yeah, well let's give him his game because he certainly won't be able to use that.
I'm going to give you Fulham v Crystal Palace. Anytime starts now.
Yeah, I'm not really looking forward to this one, I've got to be honest. As Sam alluded to in the intro, this is the Roy Hodgson derby. Hodgson obviously had a great time at Fulham, took them to a European final. It's safe to say that Fulham team was far more entertaining than the Crystal Palace side that Roy Hodgson has assembled, a side that had one shot to Brighton's 16 in their derby match last weekend. I'd like to see them be more ambitious here against a Fulham side. We know league goals. Having said that, I was really impressed with Adebayo. I thought that was an excellent debut for him in the game against Sheffield United. Preparing for my commentary notes for that game, I had to use almost a whole page of A4 because Fulham have got so many players. The trouble for Scott Parker is that not many of them are any good.
Ooh. Well done for using a whole page of A4. That must have taken you ages. Well done. Hashtag prep. Right, let's get to Sunday. Arsenal versus Leicester is Sunday night at 7:15. Now, shall we pick up on the pay-per-view thing here? Because am I wrong? And I know you sort of took the mickey out of me in the last part of the programme, but am I wrong in assuming that this game would normally have been picked for one of the broadcast slots? I mean, even if we're going for Monday night, it trumps Tottenham Burnley. It's better than Wolves Newcastle. It's probably better than Everton versus Southampton. I know Everton are top of the table. But are you telling me that out of the five games that were selected for broadcast this weekend, Arsenal-Leicester wasn't one of them?
No, I think you're right. I think it's a very cynical ploy to get people to buy into pay-per-view. My wife and her dad are massive Arsenal fans and they'll be at my house on Sunday night. I've banned them from paying for it. Not because I don't, you know, I'm too tight to pay £15, although that probably is a factor. But out of protest, I've taken the editorial decision that even if United are on TV, as they were last weekend, I'm not paying £14.95. And I would implore all supporters who don't want this to become the norm to do the same, because the more people that pay their £14.95, the more people that subscribe to pay-per-view, the more likely the TV companies are to adopt this model moving forward. I think it is an absolute disgrace that they're taking advantage of the situation where supporters can't go to games at a time when people up and down the country have got less disposable income than ever before. It's an outrage.
And I think there was a brilliant story that came out last week of the Manchester United fans giving the £14.95 that they would have spent on the pay-per-view to the local food bank and raised £23,000. So well done to all those who contributed to that. Darren?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of my favourite stories of the week. I know the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust want to do something very similar ahead of their game on pay-per-view as well. And they whatever games they do play this season, I have to say, on pay-per-view. And I think football clubs should do that. We know that, we're talking sport here, but just to make the point that we know there is a crisis, people using food banks, the kids not being fed, footballers fighting for that to change. And so if there is something that people feel they could do better with their money, then good for them. I'm all for that.
The game itself, Leicester, two defeats in a row at home. They probably can't wait to get back on the road. But they're running into an Arsenal side that are unbeaten at the Emirates in 2020, Crook.
Yeah, you have to fear for Leicester a little bit because they seem to have lost their creative spark in their past couple of matches. Obviously, they've had injury problems. They've lost key personnel as well. They started the season in expert fashion, but it looks like they're going to struggle to maintain that. Having said that, Arsenal themselves are going through a bit of a transitional period in terms, certainly the form of Aubameyang. And I apply the same comments to Arteta that I applied to Guardiola. I think he's still trying to work out what his best team is. He's still trying to work out the Aubameyang Lacazette conundrum. For me, if you've got two players of that quality, you have to find a way to deploy them in the same team. He doesn't tend to play them together, certainly against the elite sides. Whether Leicester fits that category is open to debate. I think they might both start this weekend. And it will be a full Premier League debut, I would imagine, as well for Thomas Partey. So that's an extra dynamic for the Arsenal supporters.
Leicester lost Harry Maguire. Nobody really noticed. But they've quickly noticed the absence of Chala Soyuncu, Darren.
He's out for some time. And the thing is, even before his injury, Leicester don't seem to be the side that did so well to manoeuvre themselves into second in the table last season. They've lost that dynamism that they had. They just at the moment seem to have been a bit flat since the start of the season. You can throw lots of numbers, but there was just a general malaise, I think, about the team. And I think they need something back. Without Vardy, quite clearly, we all know they lose the ability to get in behind and into trouble defences. But I just think some of their other star players as well have yet to arrive at the party. I can't see anything in this game other than an Arsenal victory, because I think defensively they were strapped even before the season. The Fofana pursuit became very protracted. And I wonder if they would have wanted him in sooner than they managed to get him. I think as far as the team overall are concerned, I just don't see it right now. And I think it's going to be quite some time before we see the real Leicester turn up this season. Arsenal for me.
Çağlar Soyuncu.
That's you.
It's not me. It's the official That's pronunciation you. Guide.
That's you.
Sam is forbo.com.
A bit like Çağlar the guy Soyuncu. Who... Andy Goldstein asked him if he was old enough to call up the sports bar, and he got his mum on the phone, and it was him pretending to do his mother's voice.
I've given you two different versions. Arsenal have taken 29 points from the 33 that have been available at home. I think Arsenal will probably get this one done as well. They won't pick Willian at false nine, and maybe Aubameyang will get his first goal since he signed his new contract. You never know. Alex Crook and Darren Lewis, thank you very much. We'll be back with you when you wake up on Monday morning with a review of all the games in the post-match pod. And we'll look ahead to the two games on Monday night as Brighton take on West Brom and Burnley take on Tottenham. Thanks to Darren Lewis and Alex Crook. Please subscribe and rate on your pod provider.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.